Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce the moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Masner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Bella, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's program. And today's program is a collaboration or partnership between the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care. And today's program is titled Updates from the 2025 American Society of Clinical Oncology, or ASCO, Annual Conference on Triple Negative Breast Cancer. And today's program was made possible by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I just want to say a few things about the call itself. We have over 225 participants on the call today. You come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have a great number of international participants, and I'm going to read off the countries from Belgium, Bulgaria, Canada, India, Iraq, Nigeria, Pakistan, Philippines, Uganda, and the United Kingdom. So this is truly a global call. And it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Wade Smith. And Dr. Smith is Breast Cancer Specialist, Assistant Clinical Professor, Department of Medical Oncology and Therapeutics Research, City of Hope, Newport Beach, California. And Dr. Smith will be addressing American Society of Clinical Oncology, ASCO 2025 Annual Meeting, Triple Negative Breast Cancer Updates, new research on triple negative breast cancer presented at ASCO, and the increasing role of diagnostic testing, biomarkers, and genetic testing in informing treatment options, and young adults and older adult updates. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Smith.
Thank you, Dr. Masner. I'm happy to be a part of this program and look forward to reviewing this ASCO annual meeting 2025 with respect to triple negative breast cancer. And just to give a little bit of introduction, triple negative breast cancer, what does it mean? It means that the breast cancer cell does not express estrogen receptor, it does not express progesterone receptor, and it does not overexpress the HER2 protein or HER2 protein. So we, by convention, call it triple negative. Having said that, though, within triple negative breast cancer, which is about 10 to 20% of all breast cancers that come to us, we have different types of triple negative breast cancer, different subtypes that all behave very different. Some are more aggressive, some are less aggressive and slower growing. The majority are fast growing, but fortunately responsive to treatment. When we talk about triple negative breast cancer, we lump it into either early stage, meaning a stage 1, 2, or 3 that we treat with curative intent, meaning we give chemotherapy or whatever we're going to give, we do surgery with the goal of having the cancer not come back and the patient living out the rest of their life cancer-free. Then the other category is advanced breast cancer, and these are patients who have a tumor that's not able to be removed. They have tumor deposits in lymph nodes or other organs of the body that cannot be removed with surgery. Our goal of care is to treat for disease control, meaning keep the disease controlled for as long as possible to benefit the patient with regard to, you know, life longevity, life expectancy, as well as, importantly, quality of life. So the treatments we give and what I'll talk about in terms of this update fall into the categories of chemotherapy, which, you know, most of us know conventional chemotherapy, medicines that we've had for several decades, some are newer, that work on rapidly dividing cells of the body, including cancer cells. There's also conventional immunotherapy that is of newer advent that basically helps to enable the body's immune system to fight the cancer cell. And we have found recently that combining immunotherapy with chemotherapy helps us to eradicate cancer eradicate tumors, as well as to control cancers that are not curable. There's also other classes of drugs also I'll touch upon, such as antibody-drug conjugates. So this is kind of a combination of chemotherapy and immunotherapy. It's basically an immunoglobulin that, as part of an immune response, targets a cancer cell and then injects a chemotherapy molecule into the cancer cell. And we call that an antibody-drug conjugate, or an ADC. And these have made a real breakthrough just in the past few years. And then we have also another category called small molecule inhibitors. These are often oral medications. They are very specific. They target a very specific protein, within the cancer cell. And so we have found use for this category of medication as well. So just to jump into some of what was reported at this annual meeting at ASCO, I'm going to jump in with what I think is really probably the most game-changing in terms of what we do, at least in the very near future. And that's a trial called ASCENT-04. And the ASCENT-04 trial basically took an antibody-drug conjugate, like I explained. It combines it with a immunotherapy drug that basically stimulates the immune system to find cancer cells called pembrolizumab. And we were looking at this combination in patients that have incurable breast cancer as the first line of treatment that they receive. And we compared this to chemotherapy, a general chemotherapy, immunotherapy combination that is the current standard of care. So essentially, one or two chemotherapy drugs paired with that pembrolizumab immune stimulatory therapy. And we wanted to see if this new antibody drug conjugate called sacituzumab govitecan in combination does a better job. And so, 400 plus patients were looked at. And what we looked at was that these patients had basically an improved time before we had to switch them to another therapy. And that's really the primary endpoint we're looking at. Will these patients be able to stay on therapy with well-controlled tumor for a longer period of time before having to switch to the next line of therapy? And it definitely demonstrated that they did. And so in addition to that, the side effects were pretty manageable. When we combine chemotherapy and immune therapy, it can lower the blood counts. In some cases, it can cause diarrhea. And we found that the overall tolerability was really on par with the existing standard of care. So this is likely to be a game changer in the very near future. And hopefully we see approval for this in the near future. So again, that is the ASCENT-04 trial. Looking at the same combination of sacituzumab govitecan, again, this antibody drug conjugate, where you have an antibody that injects a chemotherapy molecule into the cancer cell, combined with that pembrolizumab immune stimulatory therapy, we wanted to use the same regimen and use it in early stage breast cancer. Patients were wanting to cure. And so this was looked at in what's called the NEOSTAR trial, also presented update at this meeting. And again, the majority of these patients were early stage. They didn't have a lymph node involved with their cancer. We allowed them to receive, four treatments of this combination, and, we basically didn't compare it. We just wanted to see, what kind of outcome we had, and we really saw a favorable outcome. We really saw that, these patients had a lower likelihood of the cancer coming back from where we were able to measure it at, 18 months. So, that's how far we follow these patients on out. And we really felt that these patients did benefit. It's promising. It's the type of trial as a phase 2 trial where we now want to take it on and look at it in a larger trial where we randomize it to, where we basically compare it to the standard of care treatment. But it does show that the same combination that, has really, proven itself very, very significantly in this ASCENT trial can also be looked at in the curative phase of breast cancer. So I'll then move on to another combination trial that basically looks at using an immune therapy plus a small molecule inhibitor. And we're looking to see if, given this in the first line of treatment, we can help patients with advanced incurable breast cancer. And this is an immune therapy called Benmelstobart. Benmelstobart, that's a long name. And we combined it along with Enlotinib, which is the small molecule inhibitor. And so here we have an immune therapy combined with a therapy that targets a cancer cell's ability to attract blood vessels to it. And so they work very different, and it's a very novel combination. So we wanted to look and see, you know, how this would benefit. And so, you know, basically there was 147 patients. They were divided, and they were actually, compared to standard of care therapy, one-to-one. And we found that, you know, these patients basically had a longer time until such time they had to be switched to a next line of therapy. So this was exciting. This is, again, a novel combination using an immune therapy along with a small molecule inhibitor. And we found that the side effects, you know, were very tolerable. You know, some patients had high blood pressure, some patients had high cholesterol, but for the most part, no classic chemotherapy type side effects. So it's exciting to see two novel agents used in a way that can challenge, you know, conventional chemotherapy as a standard line of therapy. I will also talk about another, another treatment that, again, used basically an immunotherapy and along with another targeted therapy. And these drug names, Camrelizumab, that's Camrelizumab, along with Apatinib. And, what was found is that, we combine these therapies in the setting of early stage breast cancer. And we found that, you know, when we do this, we had a higher likelihood of these patients having a complete response at time of surgery, or actually a very high likelihood of patients having a complete response to prior to surgery. And that's kind of what we look for. Whenever we're looking at a clinical trial where we have a early stage breast cancer and we want to know if it's going to benefit the patient, we'll often assess the tumor after giving them, you know, several cycles of therapy. And if, for instance, we see that tumor completely disappear by time of surgery, you know, we feel very good that that patient's going to have a low likelihood of the cancer coming back. And so, you know, with this combination in the early phase setting, in the early stage setting, you know, we did see benefit. So I'm hoping that this, again, will move along to, for instance, a phase 3 trial, and we can see some progress made. So I will also point out another trial. This is a phase 2 trial. So basically an early phase trial looking to see if this drug is safe, if it's effective in combination with chemotherapy. And this particular drug is called BEBT-209. That's BEBT-209. And it's basically, this is what we call a CDK4 inhibitor. So it's, again, a targeted small molecule therapy that was combined with gemcitabine and carboplatin in patients with advanced incurable breast cancer. And so, again, anytime we can incorporate one of these novel acting agents into a combination, it does get us excited. And specifically with regard to this trial, these were patients who had either early relapse, meaning they had curative treatment and then their cancer came back, or they presented with advanced cancer and they've already had prior chemotherapy. And we saw, a very favorable outcome in terms of, you know, time to which patients would then need to move on to the next line of therapy. And we also saw a very favorable toxicity. So, and basically the side effects were from the chemotherapy, from the gemcitabine carboplatin. So BEBT-209, again, this is a CDK4 inhibitor, which as a class of drug is very exciting and we will likely see more of as this trial advances, or as this combination will hopefully advance in phase 3 study. So I will also say that just to kind of move along and really hit on some of the high points, you know, I was asked to talk about, you know, basically testing patients, different types of patients, and, you know, how can we basically risk stratify patients. And sometimes we're able to do that by the tumor. Sometimes we're able to do that by the patient. And so I did see an abstract presented that basically showed that for Black patients living in America, you know, Black patients tend to present with, you know, more advanced cancer and tend to have a poor prognosis in general. We wanted to see if geographic access to being enrolled onto a clinical trial made a difference. And, you know, we did see that geography did play a distance, did play a factor. How far away did they live from a study center that offered clinical trials for triple-negative breast cancer? But to just to recap, distance made a difference, probably not the most important difference. A lot of it has to do with, you know, socioeconomic and other means to enable patients to benefit from these trials, but distance did play a factor. And it is important that we do look at demographics with regard to cancer, because it can help us to predict, you know, who might, for instance, benefit from a more intensive chemotherapy versus someone else. If we were to, for instance, look at Black patients living in America, there is such a panel called ImprintTN, which is it's basically looking at the tumor DNA transcription and looking at that expression pattern with regard to patients who might benefit from immunotherapy. And this was looked at from iSpy, and it basically showed that patients who tested negative had, you know, and happened to be Black, tended to have a somewhat more challenging outcome. So again, this ties in, it's important for us to understand the biology of the cancer cell as well as take into account the patient themselves with regard to their demographic, their heritage, and so forth. I'll just recap. I think I'm maybe drawing to the end, but I just also want to say that age does play a difference. And I want to highlight this. So, you know, the KEYNOTE-522 was a study that looked at older patients, younger patients, and they did find that younger patients in this update tended to have different types of breast cancer at presentation than older adults. Older adults were more likely to have slower growing triple negative breast cancer than younger adults, younger adults were more likely to have a BRCA mutation. So age does play a difference in triple negative breast cancer. And it's important because some of these older patients we see may have slower growing or triple negative breast cancer or a subtype of triple negative breast cancer that may not necessarily benefit from intensive chemotherapy. Sometimes termed apocrine carcinoma is one subtype. And so it's important when we talk about patients in tumor board to identify those patients that, you know, maybe signaled by their age, we should look more into the biology and find out that maybe they won't benefit from intensive upfront chemotherapy like a younger patient would. Likewise, younger patients tend to have more aggressive cancers. That can play into decision making. I did have patients ask me about, you know, pregnancy implications. A young patient who wants to go on to have a pregnancy after being diagnosed with a breast cancer. Well, we've had data presented with regard to hormone-positive breast cancers, but what about triple-negative breast cancer? We still need more information in that regard. In the meantime, a young patient with a newly diagnosed triple-negative breast cancer who's wanting to go on, I would say, with a pregnancy, you know, we tend to want to wait some number of, 3 to 5 years to make sure this cancer does not come back. And I would individualize to the patient, you know, with regard to how high risk their cancer is. But age does play an impact as well. So I might have reached my time limit, and I'm happy to yield back over to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Smith. That was really just a fantastic presentation, stellar, and really very comprehensive and covering all the topics that you were asked to address and then some. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Christina Fanucci, and Dr. Fanucci is physician, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute instructor in medicine, Harvard Medical School, and she'll be addressing investigational new therapies and clinical trials, new developments in the prevention and management of treatment side effects, symptoms, discomfort, quality of life, and pain, key questions to ask your healthcare team and guidelines for preparing for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, adherence, follow-up care, and discussion of open notes. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Fanucci.
Thanks, Dr. Mesner. I'm very glad to be here talking with you all today, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to share some of these important updates from ASCO. Just to build off a little bit more of what Dr. Smith was talking about with some of the investigational new therapies for patients with triple-negative breast cancer, there were data presented on sacituzumab tirumotecan, also known as sac-TMT, which is a different antibody-drug conjugate than the sacituzumab govitecan medication that he talked about in the ASCENT-04 trial. This antibody-drug conjugate, sac-TMT, is an antibody that targets a protein on the cancer called TROP2, and then the chemotherapy that it carries is in this family of medicines called topoisomerase 1 inhibitors. This medicine, sac-TMT, was studied in a trial called the OptiTROP-Breast05 trial, and patients with no prior treatment for their advanced or metastatic triple-negative breast cancer received sac-TMT every 2 weeks with the primary objective of seeing how much their cancer shrunk as a response to this medication. This trial enrolled 41 patients, and the investigators found that 71% of patients had their cancers shrink in response to this medication. There were side effects with this medicine. The most common severe side effects were a decrease in white blood cells, decrease in red blood cells, also called anemia, and about 10% of patients had stomatitis or mouth sores with this medication. About 7% of patients did have some severe fatigue with this treatment. So there are definitely side effects to be mindful of. But I think that these early phase data suggest a possible benefit of this antibody drug conjugate combination of a TROP2 antibody attached to a topoisomerase 1 chemotherapy in the first line setting. And this is promising because just like Dr. Smith talked about with sacituzumab govitecan used in combination with that immune therapy pembrolizumab, for some patients immune therapy is not recommended either because they have a medical condition like an autoimmune disease that makes giving a immune therapy unsafe, or their tumor doesn't look like a tumor that will benefit from the addition of immune therapy. And there's a related trial to the ASCENT-04 trial called ASCENT-03, which looked at the use of sacituzumab govitecan in the first-line setting for patients who had not received any medicines before for their advanced or metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. And we expect the results from that trial to be presented this fall, but the company who makes that medicine released a press release saying that there was benefit of that medicine, sacituzumab govitecan, where patients were on that medicine for a clinically meaningful longer amount of time than just regular chemotherapy. So we're all anticipating the results of those data, likely at a meeting in the fall or winter this year. One question that I get asked a lot in clinic is about the benefit of ivermectin in cancer. And many of my patients even come to me having started this medicine on their own. We don't have a lot of data about the benefit of ivermectin in cancer, but this year at ASCO, there was an abstract published online looking at the safety and benefit to the cancer of the combination of an immune therapy called balstilimab in combination with ivermectin in patients with metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. These patients who had advanced triple-negative breast cancer that had already grown on at least one or two lines of chemotherapy in combination with immune therapy received this immune therapy balstilimab on day one and then took ivermectin on days 1 to 3, 8 to 10, and 5 to 17 of each 3-week cycle. And this trial's only enrolled 9 patients so far, and only 8 of them have been able to be evaluated. But 7 of them did not show any response to the combination of treatment and had either stable disease or 6 had progressive disease. So their disease grew right away on this treatment, which is similar to what we would expect to see with just immune therapy alone. Fortunately, the combination didn't seem to have a lot of severe side effects. So at this time, there's really not data to support the use of ivermectin in the treatment of breast cancer. And it's really important that any supplements or non-prescribed medicines that you're thinking about taking, that you talk about with your oncologist before starting them because of potential side effects and interactions with other medications. When it comes to research that was presented on the prevention of side effects, there are 3 trials that I think would be nice to highlight here. The first was a trial studying an oral chemotherapy medicine in the taxane family called BHP-107. In the data presented, 549 patients who had HER2-negative breast cancer, which includes triple-negative breast cancer, were randomized to receive either this oral BHP-107 medicine twice daily on the first day of the week, on weeks 1, 2, and 3 of a 4-week cycle, or traditional IV paclitaxel medicine on days 1, 8, and 15 of a 4-week cycle. And the investigators found that the amount of time that patients stayed on these medicines was similar whether they received them by IV or as a pill. The oral version of the taxane, DHP-107, had lower rates of neuropathy, so development of numbness or tingling in the fingers or toes, less muscle and joint pain that came along with this treatment, lower rates of allergic reactions, and then, of course, less symptoms related to injection or infusion compared to patients who received the paclitaxel IV. But the patients who received the taxane medicine, BHP-107, as a pill, were more likely to have neutropenia and had some more GI side effects that were fortunately low severity, but some mild nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea were reported more frequently for patients who got the pill version of the taxane. Another trial that I wanted to bring some attention to is a trial that's investigating the benefit of scalp cooling for patients who are receiving different cancer-directed treatments. And at this meeting, the results of scalp cooling for patients who are receiving a different antibody-drug conjugate called trastuzumab deruxtecan were presented. This trial allowed patients to choose whether they wanted to have scalp cooling, so wearing a cold cap during their infusion of medication to try to reduce hair loss, or whether they did not want to have scalp cooling, and then followed those patients over the time that they received the medication. And unfortunately, this trial did not show that there was any benefit in terms of reducing hair loss of scalp cooling for patients receiving trastuzumab deruxtecan. There's still a lot of interest in scalp cooling for patients who are receiving these medicines that can cause hair loss, and there's some evidence that scalp cooling to a colder temperature can be helpful. There have been studies that looked at the use of colder temperatures of scalp cooling during infusions with medications like anthracyclines, which are chemotherapy medicines we often use in the early line setting for patients with triple negative breast cancer. And there are further studies looking at scalp cooling with colder temperature to see if that helps reduce hair loss more. So stay tuned for the results of those. I also wanted to highlight the challenge trial from the Canadian Cancer Trials Group for patients with colon cancer. I think this was an interesting trial because in this trial, patients who had high-risk stage 2 or 3 colon cancer who had received chemotherapy were enrolled, and the study compared either providing patients with educational materials about health or giving them those same materials and enrolling them in a 3-year structured exercise program. The trial enrolled 840 patients from 2009 to 2021, so over a long period of time, and found that the patients who had the structured exercise program as part of their care had more exercise tolerance, which makes sense. So they had longer walking distance, higher ability to exercise harder for longer periods of time. And they also found that the patients who were randomized to this structured exercise program had improvement in reducing the chance of their cancer coming back. And then also, while the numbers were small in the trial for development of other cancers, they found that the patients who were in the structured exercise program arm had lower rates of developing new breast cancers, new prostate cancers, as well as new colon cancers, suggesting a benefit of exercise to reduce the development of new unrelated cancers as well. These data really just add to the body of data that support the benefit of exercise in improving quality of life and reducing the development of other health conditions in patients with a history of cancer. Moving on just to talk about some tips for communicating with your health team. When it comes to visits with your providers, first, I think it's important to bring someone with you either in person or on the phone for visits where decisions are being made. I hear from patients often that these visits can be overwhelming and it can be hard to remember all that's discussed, and having a trusted friend or family member there to listen and take notes can be really useful. During these visits, it's important to make sure that you understand the different parts of your treatment. So are you going to have surgery, radiation, systemic medicines, some combination of all three of those things in your treatment, and then also what order those things are recommended for you. I think it's also important to understand the goal of your treatment. Is the goal to cure your cancer by reducing the risk that it recurs, or to control the cancer with medicines that delay symptoms and aim to prolong life? For telemedicine visits, it's important to follow the instructions that the scheduling team provides you to make sure that you're set up correctly for the appointment. You'll need the health system app on your computer or phone, as well as a video conferencing app like Zoom or Teams to be able to securely connect to the meeting. Your doctor's office should provide you instructions on all of the things that you'll need to connect correctly. If you're able to do a practice video call with someone beforehand to make sure your camera and microphone are all set up, that can help prevent any glitches during the visit. And then I think it's also important to be in a place with a strong internet connection so that there's not issues where video or sound are cutting out, and then log in with plenty of time to troubleshoot if something isn't working. It's also important to make sure you're in a location where you're able to do a televisit, since many doctors and nurse practitioners and PAs are only able to do visits for patients who are physically in the same state as the clinic that they work in. Just as with the in-person visits, it's helpful to bring a list of questions to these telemedicine visits. When it comes to scheduling follow-up after a televisit, usually follow-up is scheduled through either the patient portal or by a phone call rather than stopping by the checkout desk like you would do if you were there in person. So if you haven't heard from your doctor's team within a week of your visit, it's important to call back and make sure that you have your follow-up scheduled. And then just talking a little bit about the open notes, I think it is helpful to know that many of the notes from your providers are available for you to read through the patient portal. These notes can be a really good resource summarizing your visit and the next steps in your treatment. It is important to remember that these notes aren't written to patients, but rather are written to communicate between healthcare team members and can sometimes contain medical language or jargon that you don't understand. And if you have questions about what's written in your chart, you can always ask your healthcare provider for some clarification. And with that, I'll send it back to you, Dr. Messer.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Fenucci. That was just a wonderful presentation, stellar. Certainly covered a really great number of points, very comprehensive. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. So thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Arlene Brothers. And Ms. Brothers is Director of Administration, Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. And she'll be addressing Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation's free programs. And we'll talk about their website, including the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation website as well. It's my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Brothers, who also, of course, is a partner organization on today's program.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. And on behalf of the TNBC community and the TNBC Foundation, thank you to Dr. Smith and Fanucci for your extremely informative presentations. Awesome. We're so appreciative of your expertise and help in explaining the latest updates in TNBC research and treatments. This teleconference is one of many programs offered by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. TNBC Foundation is invested in TNBC education, support, and TNBC-specific research. We work hard to keep you informed about new and emerging research and treatment options while also providing support to TNBC patients and caregivers. We have TNBC-specific educational brochures and fact sheets that are available as free downloads from our website, tnbcfoundation.org. Also on our website, we have two free TNBC-specific clinical trials matching services that are a little easier to navigate than other similar portals. Our other online resources include discussion forums, support groups, and a TNBC Foundation Facebook group so you can easily connect with other individuals who are living with TNBC at any time of the day or night. These resources are here to help you and remind you that you are not alone. Finally, we have monthly virtual meetups for our TNBC community. Metastatic Mondays, Tuesdays with TNBC Friends, and Thursdays with TNBC Friends. And in partnership with TOUCH, the Black Breast Cancer Alliance, we also have a monthly meetup specifically for Black women. If you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or visit our website, tnbcfoundation.org, you will get regular updates and be able to register for these and all of our other upcoming programs. Thank you all for joining us today, and I'll now turn the program back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Feathers. That was just a wonderful presentation. It's a go-to organization for anyone with triple negative breast cancer. It is, I think, the only organization of its kind in the country, and so please do take advantage of it. And we will be sending all of you a SurveyMonkey evaluation, and in that evaluation will come in about 10 days. You'll also be getting any of the resources that we mentioned during the program, you'll be getting that information as well. So thank you so much. Thank you. And our next speaker, let's move ahead too quickly, just a second. Our next speaker is Christina Monaco, and Ms. Monaco is an oncology social worker with Cancer Care, and she'll be discussing Cancer Care's free national programs and services. TNBCF and Cancer Care phone numbers and our hope line, as well as our website. It is my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Monaco.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and for everybody else who has presented. As mentioned, my name is Christina Monaco, and I'm an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care have partnered together to ensure that those diagnosed with TNBC have access to free psychosocial services and support, as well as information on clinical trials like we've spoken about today. There are a lot of aspects of a breast cancer diagnosis that could be addressed through psychosocial supportive services, like making informed treatment decisions, making the decision to enroll in a clinical trial, quality of life concerns, or communication with one's medical team. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation has also generously funded the TNBC Helpline, which provides callers with access to comprehensive services. Some of these services that the TNBC Foundation and Cancer Care provide include resource navigation services, counseling, educational workshops, publications, and limited financial assistance. By calling the TNBC Helpline, individuals are connected to an oncology social worker or a Hopeline specialist who is aware of the physical, emotional, and practical changes that might arise when diagnosed with TNBC. Individuals diagnosed with TNBC might choose to supplement existing social networks by joining a support group or engaging in counseling. Joining a support group in particular can offer the chance for TNBC patients to speak with one another, gather information, and provide support. Cancer Care offers TNBC-specific national online support groups, which are moderated by oncology social workers. These online support groups aim to reduce feelings of loneliness or anxiety, explore new ways of coping, increase feelings of empowerment, and provide practical information about treatment and resources. You can register for an online support group through cancercare.org by selecting our services and then support groups. Also, many hospitals, treatment centers, and nonprofit organizations offer supportive services as well. Individuals may experience practical and financial concerns throughout their treatment, so please know that if you're encountering these financial hardships, there are other organizations that also might be able to help you. So Cancer Care in particular, in partnership with the TNBC Foundation, can assist in helping you locate resources and does have some limited financial assistance of our own. Cancer Care's resource navigation offers a short-term, strength-based approach service to patients and caregivers affected by cancer nationally. A trained specialist will work with the client in connecting them to resources, referrals, and other financial assistance. Cancer Care also offers clinical trial information, resources, and support to help people affected by cancer, including with the website that we developed called mytriallist.org. That's a resource to help people find clinical trials nearby and provide support through the clinical trial process. If you're interested in learning more about the services that the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care offer, I encourage you to call the TNBC helpline at 877-880-8622. Our oncology social workers and Hopeline specialists can share additional information about our services and can also help you explore ways to connect with others through our support groups, financial assistance resources, and resource navigation. It has been such a pleasure sharing all this information with you and being a part of this workshop, and I will send it back to Dr. Messner. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Monica. That was really just a wonderful presentation, wonderful resources for our TNBCF community and cancer care. And we will be sending, again, we'll be doing a SurveyMonkey evaluation at the end of the program, and we will be sending out with you all the resources that we've mentioned during the program. And now we're going to move right on to the Q&A, and I'm going to ask Bella to explain to you how to queue up for questions. Bella?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So this is a question for Dr. Smith. If a triple goes to surgery and the tumor turns out larger than expected and over 2 centimeters, can Keytruda be added to her adjuvant chemotherapy?
That is a very good question. I think that the in terms of the indication, the on label, that sort of thing, there may be some resistance in terms of that from a payer standpoint. I'm speaking openly. But Keytruda is given in the adjuvant setting when we give it in the neoadjuvant setting. So I think if it were a patient I were treating, I would probably base it on some factors such as, well, obviously there's residual tumor, so we didn't eradicate the tumor with chemotherapy. So I would be prone towards, being very proactive. I would give the pembrolizumab on average if the patient I felt were a good candidate for that. And I might even combine it with another line of chemotherapy such as capecitabine.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And a question for Dr. Fanucci. If a triple develops brain mets, should she also have a lumbar puncture to rule out leptomeningeal disease?
I think that depends a lot on the patient. Many patients with brain metastases do not have leptomeningeal disease, and lumbar puncture isn't particularly perfect at detecting leptomeningeal disease. So I think it's a conversation between you and your oncologist and then, perhaps the radiation oncologist or neuro-oncologist who's involved in your care to see if a lumbar puncture is necessary.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And again, for Dr. Smith, when a triple is diagnosed, does knowledge of the KI-67 influence treatment decisions?
That's a good question, and I would say it can't. I think certainly taking it into account along with the grade, maybe some other features regarding the biopsy that might suggest this is, you know, an African carcinoma or some other subtype of triple negative breast cancer, it could influence which chemotherapy I would choose to give, maybe even whether to give chemotherapy in a small, very small tumor in an elderly patient. So I would take that into account with regard to treatment decision-making.
Excellent. Thank you. Very helpful to our participants here. Dr. Fanucci, tricycline-based regimens based gaining popularity for treatment of triple-negative breast cancer. What is the standard of care?
Can you repeat the question, please?
So are
anthracycline. Okay.
Anthracycline.
So are non-anthracycline, okay. So I think that that's a really interesting question. You know, again and again in patients who have higher risk disease, we've seen a benefit of anthracyclines in reducing the chance of cancer coming back, triple negative cancer coming back when we're treating it in the early stage setting. For small cancers where I am still planning on giving chemotherapy, so usually a cancer less than 1.5 centimeters, I will often omit the anthracycline. But for most patients who are young, so you know under 65 and generally healthy, I will usually try to include an anthracycline for many of those patients. Then, you know, there are of course some patients where because of age or other comorbidities, anthracyclines are a little bit higher risk. We do have some newer data for anthracycline sparing regimens that we can use instead of the KEYNOTE-522 regimen, which includes that anthracycline, like the NEOPACT trial, which uses just the chemotherapies carboplatin and paclitaxel in combination with pembrolizumab, and we've seen good results with that combination given before surgery. So I think there are definitely options for patients where we have concerns that they may be higher risk with an anthracycline, but the standard, I would say, is still to include an anthracycline for higher risk patients.
Thank you so much. And a question for Dr. Smith. Do you have any triple negative patients with stage 4 cancer who had a complete response with immunotherapy? If so, did any of them decide to discontinue therapy? What factors helped guide you and the patient into this decision? Have you seen relapses after therapy was discontinued? If so, what percent relapse after choosing to discontinue? There was no medical necessity for the patient to discontinue.
I mean, that's a good question. I think that, you know, it's speaking in general, there is a kind of tail end of the curve, the bell curve, where patients with, incurable advanced breast cancer, where the goal of care is disease control, have, excellent, prolonged responses to where we don't see any activity on, imaging going out sometimes beyond 2 years, sometimes beyond 4 years. So we do have those outlier patients, and that's a question we don't have an answer to. I mean, if you have one of those patients that's in kind of an outlier in a good way, I think it very much depends on the provider, how they're tolerating the treatment. I know some will, probably most would keep them on that immune therapy for some time, assuming that that's the only line of therapy that they're on. But you just, again, have to kind of individualize it to the patient. We don't have any data. We don't have any, real evidence to direct us one way or the other with respect to those kind of those less infrequent, scenarios. I think the standard of care is you continue them on the immunotherapy so long as they're tolerating it. And if you cross that bridge, however far out, you can, you know, kind of revisit the conversation, see where the data is at.
So thank you. And for Dr. Fanucci, I'm going to be part of a clinical trial involving phase 3 antibody conjugate drug MK-2870. Can you speak about this drug's effectiveness and benefits?
I am just looking this up right now, but I am, the sacituzumab tirmatican, this medication that we talked about now, I guess its prior name was MK-2870. So we saw this good early signal of benefit for this medicine in the data presented at ASCO, and the objective response rate, like we talked about with that medicine, was high, about 71%. So I think definitely some strong signal of potential benefit. And thank you for participating in this clinical trial.
Excellent. Thank you. And let's see. For Dr. Smith, my oncologist has left this practice to move to another state. How do I find another oncologist to rely upon?
So you're asking, how do you find another oncologist? That's a good question. I don't know if that particular patient has a established internist primary care provider that they see, who's familiar with other groups within the community. I think that you always have the option of an academic center. If you don't know of a good community center, that's always somewhere where you'll, be offered clinical trials and receive standard of care. But I would say probably I would direct a patient in either way. See who their primary care who their primary care provider directs them to, or, one could consider, an NCI-designated cancer center, academic referral center, where they would be, guaranteed to receive a standard of care or be offered a good clinical trial.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you. For Dr. Fanucci, is Elota effective in reducing recurrence?
So in patients who have received medicine before surgery and then have any residual cancer, in the area of the breast that's removed at the time of surgery, what we call residual disease, there is evidence from this CREATE-X trial that giving capecitabine after surgery is helpful at reducing the chance of the cancer coming back. And in people who received pembrolizumab before surgery, we usually will give that pembrolizumab and Zolota or capecitabine medicine in combination.
Excellent, thank you. Let's see. Oh, so this is a question for both Dr. Smith and Dr. Fanucci. Are there any breast cancer vaccine trials out there that you would recommend to TNBC patients?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm only able to think about the ones that are, the trials that are available here at Dana-Farber. And right now we only have a vaccine trial for patients with HER2-positive disease. I am not aware of any enrolling trials for patients with triple-negative disease. But Dr. Smith, I don't know if you are.
I'm not sure of an actively accruing trial. There are vaccine trials out there, and again, I think the question being, how does it benefit? Does it reduce the risk of a breast cancer recurrence years later? When given after curative, upfront treatment, that's, probably the majority of available vaccine trials in the triple negative breast cancer space fall in that category. I at this time I'm not sure what is open or actively accruing. So, but these do open periodically from time to time. Again, if it's at a reputable center, it's certainly something that you can inquire into. But the last I've done an availability search, I did not see one within my vicinity.
And a good place just to look for clinical trials is the clinicaltrials.gov website. So if you go to that website, you can type in key terms like triple negative breast cancer and vaccine, and it will show you places that have registered clinical trials that meet those search criteria.
And Christina, do you also want to mention the trial list that we have at Cancer Care? Christina? Ms. Monaco, do you want to mention the clinical trial list we have at Cancer Care? Bo? Well, we do have a trial list also at Cancer Care, and if you go to the Cancer Care website, you'd be able to find the trial list that we have there. That might also be of assistance to you. And now I'm going to ask for our speakers to provide a takeaway for today's program. So I'm going to start with Dr. Smith first, and if he would just provide just a quick takeaway for people to take away from today's program.
Yes, again, I'm very happy to be a part of this program today. Thank you, Dr. Mesner, and thank you to my fellow speakers. Essentially, we're seeing a lot of hot activity in the space of triple negative breast cancer, you know, as we are also seeing in the space of HER2 positive breast cancers. Specifically within triple negative breast cancer, we're seeing new role for immunotherapy. We're seeing a new role for early phase trials that are looking at making tumors that are no longer immune sensitive now immune sensitive to immunotherapy. And we also have these targeted small molecule inhibitors that are proving themselves as well in early phase trials. So I always encourage patients to inquire into a clinical trial if they're at that point where the treatment they're on is no longer working, and if they are a patient with advanced breast cancer. But even patients newly diagnosed with early stage breast cancers, there are trials looking at, you know, adding to what we already provide that has been shown to provide benefit in hopes of enhancing benefit even further. So thank you all again.
Thank you so much, Dr. Smith. And Dr. Fanucci.
I just echo everything Dr. Smith said in terms of all of the promising therapeutics on the horizon for patients with triple negative breast cancer. And I think, you know, one important takeaway from that challenge trial in patients with colon cancer is that there really is benefit of exercise no matter where you are in your cancer journey. If there was a medicine that did all the great things for us that exercise does, we would all be taking it. And if you're able to incorporate any activity into your routine, it's a really great benefit in so many ways.
Thank you. And Ms. Brothers?
Hi, thank you, Dr. Mesner. Since you were talking about clinical trials, I just wanted to point out if you go to tnbctrials.org, it will open up the clinical trials page of our website that has some links there for clinical trials matching services. Also, you know, just want to give everyone our website address again, tnbcfoundation.org. And thank you all for coming.
Thank you so much. And I would just like to say that on behalf of Cancer Care, this has been a wonderful program. And I just want to thank all of our speakers who've been phenomenal. I want to ask all of our participants who asked such really great questions. And I also, I can't thank you all enough for your participation in today's program. But I do want to say a few things about today's workshop itself. For those of you who had a chance to ask a question, please take your question to your treating healthcare team because they know you the best. And of course, they can answer all of your questions, and you know that they're supposed to, you know, they know the best, so they can answer all of your questions. And for those of you who are in queue and didn't get to ask your questions, take your questions to your healthcare team and ask them your questions. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. And also, we have learned over the years with these programs that many of you have no difficulty reaching your healthcare team during the day, but it seems that evenings, weekends, and holidays seem to be more challenging. So always ask your healthcare team how to reach them weekends, holidays, and evenings, and also remember that you are not alone, that you are now part of a community of support, and we are all here to help you. And the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation is a great resource for all of you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.